Good morning, everybody. If you're the type that likes to follow along in an actual Bible, Philippians chapter 2, we're going to get there in just a second. As always, it's an honor and privilege to be here. I'll be back in August for a midweek sort of thing. I can't wait. I love you guys. I love your pastor. I love what you guys stand for. This church, as much as anything else, if I was to say that this church is about the action being elsewhere, this church is about confronting oppression everywhere we see it. And I love that because that's what we're all about. And so on your way out today, I'm not going to be antisocial, but I do have to go speak at Frankston. So if you're looking around for me, it's not like I didn't run off to a green room. I'm going to the next place. But my friends, my team, they're out there. They're going to be out there at our resource table. Everything's available in 4 formats, CD, DVD, USB, and direct download. 100% of what we make from that, we give to the poor and the afflicted, all right? So we confront oppression everywhere we see it. There's orphanages in China that we get behind that take care of mentally handicapped kids. There's a rescue home in Cape Town that gets girls out of sex trafficking, things like this. So all I'm asking is before you go to lunch, let me put something in your hands that'll change the way you look at God. And in so doing, you put something in our hands that helps us feed, clothe, shelter, educate mentally handicapped kids in China, get girls out of sex trafficking, off drugs, high school educated, and job trained. That's what that is all about. My good friend Dawn and Shane, I'm not talking about myself in third person, there's another Shane. They'll be out there. And I've already, listen, they're from Werribee, but I confiscated their knives before they go there. So you just, you're okay. You're right. All right, so you could go on out there and say hello to them. They're very, very, very good people and good friends of mine, and make my life better at every stage. All right, so you do realize when I'm in Werribee, I tell the same joke about over here. All right, Philippians chapter 2. Quick historical context: Paul is chained to a wall in a Roman prison. As an enemy of the state, awaiting execution either by crucifixion or by Nero, was the Caesar at the time. He had a ritual of impaling Christians. He would take a wooden stake and stick it into your rectum while you were alive, and then he would cover you in tar and set you on fire to keep his backyard alight. Either way he died, he's awaiting that fate. He is writing letters back to these churches. Paul died. This should be obvious, but Paul died never knowing if his message took hold. Paul died before the Gospels were written. Paul died before he knew the church was going to take off. Paul gave his life to something that he was willing to die for, but wasn't sure it was going to work. And I find that inspiring. When he wrote the book of Philippians, it sort of rolls off our tongue like, yeah, Paul was in prison when he wrote this. But hang on a second. Let's think about that for a second. He was chained to a wall, being tortured on a regular basis, awaiting death. And he's writing back to these people who are really the only reason he's still alive, because in a first century Roman prison, they didn't feed you. Your friends or family had to feed you. And out of all the churches Paul started, at the time of writing, this was the only church that sent somebody named Epaphroditus to feed him and give him blankets and basic comfort, which at great risk to Epaphroditus, because follow me here, if Paul's an enemy of the state and you're the only one that shows up to feed him, might you be an enemy of the state as well? So there's lots of inspiring sort of things going on here. And he's writing back to the Philippians about what it means to be a follower of Jesus and what it means to live. In the first century, Christianity was not a way to go to heaven when you die. Christianity was about a new way of living in the world. It was about a way of being here in a different sort of way. And so he says this, and I find this very inspiring. This is Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. Let's just stop right there. This could be the shortest sermon I've ever preached. How are we going with that? Like all the Bible thumping I hear. Well, the Bible clearly says, right? Well, okay, if we're going to Bible thump, let's Bible thump that one. How are we doing with our grumbling, complaining, and disputing? Actually, in another book, Romans 14, he says, never, ever, ever quarrel over disputable matters. And then he calls everything disputable. Except for Jesus was the Christ, he was crucified, the resurrection is true, and he had flesh on. He says, the day you worship, what you eat, whatever. The holy days, if you're doing it to the Lord, you do it to the Lord. Let's do all things without grumbling or disputing. Let's take a full 30 seconds to let that set in and be willing to ask a courageous question. In the last 7 days, how have I done with that? In the last 30 days. And if I could be just blunt, can I be blunt? Of course someone can be blunt because I run to Frankston. If you're given to grumbling and criticism, if every time the phone rings and it's you, it's an explanation of everything that's wrong, let me tell you where we could, let me tell you where you did this wrong. Let me tell you, let me tell you what's going wrong with the church, with the family, with the business. If you're given to grumbling and complaining and disputing, let me be frank. They might not tell you, but I don't mind telling you. You are annoying. And worse than that, listen to me clearly, you're boring. I mean, boring. How boring can you be? There is nothing compelling about someone who is given to negativity, grumbling, and complaining. There's nothing that shines about that. Paul says, true followers of Jesus, do nothing, do all things without grumbling or disputing. And then he uses some very serious language here. Watch this. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent. Hang on a second. Is Paul tying not grumbling to innocence and blamelessness? Now, I'm going to leave you to wrestle with all the theological implications of that, but I'm just saying that's what he said. That you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish. Wait a minute, he's tying all of this to no grumbling or complaining. In the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine like lights or shine like stars in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. In other words, I hope I'm not going to die only to hear that you're a bunch of people complaining about petty things. Now, a couple of observations about this. Next slide. One, they were communal in thought, not individual. Like, it's not like Paul emailed this to 200 people. This would have been sent to, he would have just been hoping the mail carrier didn't get eaten by a mountain lion. And he shows up and the Philippian believers are like all meeting, oh, Paul has written us a letter. Let me read you the two verses before this, just for some context. Here was the two verses for this. Next slide. Philippians 2:12. Therefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, so now, not only is in my presence, but much more in my absence. In other words, don't just behave when I show up. Let me hear that you're living like this when I'm not there. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Something we've heard 10 million times. For it is God who works in you, both to his will and to work for his good pleasure. That's the two verses before the no grumbling verse. Now, here's the thing. In Greek, the your is plural. Essentially, you're in this together. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. This is a plural command to a group of people. The idea is we're all in this together. We have to make a commitment as a value system in our culture, in our church, that we are not going to be people who are known for grumbling and disputing. The very next verse, he says, do all things without grumbling and disputing, which for one more 10-second settle in, let's stop and breathe and go, how am I doing with that? How am I doing with that? Now, I don't have time this morning to go through all this, but just if you're the type that likes to study, next slide. He's ranting as a first century rabbi about the Old Testament Exodus story. So he's using specific lines, like grumbling was Exodus 16. Where God gets these people, redeems them out of slavery into freedom, and they still found something to grumble about. They actually said, did you bring us out here to die? Because in Egypt we ate till we were full. No, you didn't. You were slaves in Egypt. You were horribly mistreated. Are you kidding me? See, when we get into grumbling about small things, it skews our remembering of what truly happened. You hear this from people, oh, we need to get back to the good old days. Good old days weren't that good. They weren't. Everything's better. Medicine's better. I mean, you imagine if your great-great-great-grandfather came and saw how we're living now, he'd be like, you have aspirin for headaches? We just had to chew on pine bark till we felt better. You kidding me? You lived to 84? We were dead at 45. Like, are you kidding me? That blameless and pure is a quote from Genesis 17. Warped and crooked generation. Deuteronomy 32, Moses is like, because he got you out of Egypt and you still complain, that makes you a warped and crooked generation. Shine like stars is from Daniel 12. He talks about, you know, people who show forth the light of the love of God in our world, they shine like stars. And then run in vain is a quote from Isaiah 65. Paul's like, I don't want to think that I'm chained to a wall for nothing. I want to know that we've affected our community. And here's how I'm going to know that we've created together a group of people who shine like stars. Next slide. So Paul's referencing specific passages from the Old Testament to make a bigger point. Specifically, the Exodus story. A story where God is rescuing people from slavery with the intent to engage in a marriage relationship with them. Let me say this as simply as possible. Next slide. Paul is essentially saying, don't be like the freed Israelites and grumble. Rather, shine like stars. Shine like stars. There's lots of talk about how do we be light in our world. And if I was to say, we need to be a light to our community. Heck, the entire video that I didn't know was going to play was about a vision that God gave Rob about being little specks of light around. This is a common metaphor. And if I say we need to be a light in our community, nobody disagrees with that. That's obvious. No one's going to say, no, we need more darkness. No. It's obvious. Nobody. The question is though, where's our language for how we do that? Paul's giving us something very concrete here. There's There's an ancient rabbinical teaching about two slaves that were complaining about the mud in their toes while crossing the Red Sea. So they're getting out of slavery into freedom, and they still found something to grumble about. They grumbled about the mud in their toes, and because they were looking at the ground, they lost sight of the walls of water being held back for their deliverance. Which leads me to this question. Is there any place in our lives where we've become so focused on the mud, we've lost sight of the water? We've lost sight of the water. Let's say it this way. Next slide. He calls the Philippians children of God. He says they're not like the crooked generation of Exodus. In Deuteronomy, it says, because you've grumbled, you're no longer my children. Like, I'm sick of this, right? He urges them to continue not grumbling, but rather shine like stars, to believe that how the story went is not necessarily how the story will go. Yes, they grumbled, but you can be different. Now, some quick exegesis here, because this is so important to the story. If you look at the original language, the Greek word for complaining, next slide, is gongizmon. So Paul's saying, How do you shine like stars? It's this simple. Don't grumble. People who don't grumble are the ones shining like stars. And that's so true. There's nothing inspiring about somebody who's never went through anything. There's nothing. Somebody gets up here and says, my marriage is perfect. My business is successful. All three of my children are awesome, right? Yeah, no, there's nothing. That's not much inspiring about that. I mean, we're happy for them, sort of. There's nothing inspiring about somebody goes, you know what? When I think about my past, pretty much nailed it, right? No. Anybody that talks like that, we don't want to know you, right? Right? There's nothing. What's inspiring is people who hit some bumps and yet they keep their head up, their shoulders back, their hands clean, their heart pure, their taste sweet. They are going for it. That's inspiring. The word for grumble in Greek is gongizmon. I don't even have to explain that, do I? Gong, an out-of-place symbol. The idea is that this church, your family, your business is a song. This church, the way all these different parts come together, is a song. It's a dance. And you're either going to be in step with the dance or you're going to be out of rhythm and an out-of-place symbol. Paul, in another book, calls it somebody who lacks love is like a clanging cymbal. It's a common sort of idea that this place is a song. Be a part of the song, but never a gong. And here's the thing, that the gongs are the people grumbling and criticizing and complaining. That's what Paul's saying. Paul's like, do not be a gong. Now, the word gongizmon is to grumble, but it can also mean foolish reasoning. It can mean reasoning that has malicious desire. In other words, I've lost the plot, so I'll simply make noise with my mouth. I won't play with the song. Like, look, if you guys have great musicians here, but if you've got the greatest singer in Melbourne standing next to the greatest keyboard player in Melbourne, standing next to the greatest guitar player in Melbourne, it doesn't matter if the drummer's terrible. If the drummer is out of rhythm, it butchers the entire song. It doesn't matter how good everybody else is. If the drummer's off, it butchers the song. And what Paul's saying is that if you want to be a bad drummer, if you want to be an out-of-place cymbal, grumble. That when we don't grumble, we shine like stars. Which leads me to this question. Why are, for most of us, and everybody would struggle with this to some, why is our default button to grumble? Why do we have to check ourselves regularly to go, wait a minute, wait, what am I complaining about here? So a couple thoughts on this. Next slide. One, I think we grumble when we forget to remember. We forget to remember our nation is awesome. You woke up in Australia today, man. A nation with motor cars and paved roads and stores that prepackage food for you. A nation with clean water and tap, machines that do washing, other machines that do drying, world-class healthcare right down the road. This is Australia. You live in Melbourne, a place where the biggest problem is whoever built the roads thought no one would ever show up. Right? It's your biggest problem. You're like, Shane, you understand, you know how long it's taken them to fix that airport road? Yes, I do. But when I hear Australians complain about Australia, I'm like, mate, where are you gonna go? Like, honestly and bluntly, if you can't make it here, where are you gonna go? The top five greatest nations on the earth. Our life is great. Our health is... Look, if you don't have a chemotherapy appointment today, it's a good day. We have motor cars, our homes. Look, even if you live in the biggest heap of crap in Melbourne, you're still richer than 95% of the world was in 1820 and likely in the top 10% of the world today. Are you kidding me? Your life is awesome. We have medicine. I mean, the medical advancements are unbelievable. The stuff that they could do to make quality of life better for people is so much better. I mean, goodness me, 150 years ago, people were dying of strep throat because there was no antibiotics. 300 years ago, if you got strep throat, they thought you had a demon and tried to drown it out of you. The world is getting better. We forget to remember our salvation story, that we have laws that protect the weak against the strong. We forget to remember these things. We forget to remember where we would be had God not touched our life. Once a year in Jewish culture, they come together and they lift an offering and they declare in a loud voice, my father was a wandering Aramean. In other words, if God had not intervened in my life, I would still be a wandering person with no place to call home. In other words, let's say it this way. Where would you be today had Jesus not touched your life? Where would we be today? And if we don't remember that, we grumble. We lose sight of the whole story. Look, you don't judge success on a plotted point. You judge success on a trajectory line. Like if I said, I have $100,000 in the bank and no debt. Am I winning or losing? You actually have no idea. Like, what if I inherited $100 million from my great uncle and I'm an idiot and I'm down to my last $100,000? Or what if I started with nothing and discipline and perseverance? I'm at $100,000 of no debt. Two different people can be at the exact same place and one be winning and one be losing because you judge success on trajectory, not on plotted points. And when we lose sight of the whole story, we can grumble about a plotted point and lose sight of the whole thing, lose sight of the whole thing. And by the way, we hate it when people do that to us. We hate it when we have a conversation that's an hour long and somebody misses the whole point of the conversation and picks on one thing they didn't like. We hate that. You don't like it when people judge you on plotted points. You want the trajectory line. We grumble when we forget to remember. Number two, we grumble when we forget to remember the story's larger. We focus on the mud and miss the water. We focus on the mud. We grumble when we forget to remember the entire trajectory of the whole thing, what God has been doing and at work in our lives individually and in the world. Number three, we grumble when we think we need more or we compare ourselves to what other people have. Paul insisted in 1 Corinthians, that we're not lacking anything. This is what happens with people. And next time I come, I'm going to minister a whole message on this because it's so important. But the idea of when we get caught in a comparison trap, where instead of looking in and up, we look right and left to get our value. And when we do that, we get stuck in the land of bigger, richer, faster, smarter. And the problem with that is that for every there's always an est, right? Even if you get richer, you'll never be richest. It doesn't matter. If you win the lottery, you're richer, but you're still not richest. And if we don't break the habit of looking right and left instead of in and up, we're always going to be stuck in the prison of more and more and more and more, and it never, ever delivers. And when we get stuck looking right and left instead of in and up, we grumble about our plotted point while losing sight of the whole story where God has brought us and without comparing ourselves to a global scale. Honestly, if you woke up in Melbourne this morning, you're likely in the richest 10% of the whole world. So if you're going to look right and left, look left. Look at the people who have less and then commit your life to making their life better. Like, honestly, to look right and split hairs between the richest 10% of people in the world, that's insane. But we grumble when we think we need more than what we have. Can we just stop and be honest for a second? If God never did one more thing for most of us, our lives would be awesome. Honestly, you woke up in Australia. You have places that cook food for you. Clean water's in your tap. Are you kidding me? This is Australia, man. Like, if you don't have a chemotherapy appointment today, can we just call that even, right? Like, God has done an amazing thing for all of us, all of us. And when we look right and left instead of in and up, we grumble. Let's say it this way. The idea that I will have peace and contentment at some unknown point in the future is a lie, right? So, if I could just lose the weight, I'll have contentment. And look, if you need to lose weight, please, I hope you lose weight. It will do good things for your health. But I'll tell you this, if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. When I just meet that person, look, if you want to be married, I hope you get married. A good spouse is a great thing to have. Now, you marry a bad one, you'll pray for a comet to come to earth to bring you sweet relief from them. But if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. There is no such thing as a good marriage that was forged between two miserable single people. God, we hated our life, but we got married and it fixed everything. No, no. Oh, if I just got that raise, I'd feel better. Look, if you want a raise, I hope you get a raise, especially if you deserve a raise. But if you're not enough without it, you're never gonna be enough with it. Boy, I'd like that bigger house. Okay, but if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. Or that shirt, or that car, or whatever. The idea that contentment is somewhere out there based on some external object is a lie. Let's say it this way, number four. We grumble when we feel God has shorted us. Once again, when we look right and left instead of in and up, we grumble when we feel God has shorted us. Jesus talks about this in Matthew chapter 5 about what good does it do you to love only people who bless you, but pray and love those who persecute you, because you have to have a concept of God that God sends rain upon the just and the unjust. God is not a person who withholds from one and not the other. Let's say it this way. How we see God will profoundly impact how we treat others. If we feel like God has shorted us, then we will feel justified in shorting others. If we feel like God has shorted us, we will grumble while most people have it worse than us. Which leads me to this question. Do we feel deep down that God has been good to us? One of the cures for grumbling is a deep internal conviction. It says, you know what? If God never did one more thing for me, he has been good to me. If I took account of my life and only what's in my right now, I'm not allowed to believe for something out there, just for a second. Now, you should be believing for something. You're going to lead something. You got to be believing God for whatever you think he's saying. But just for a second, if you only took an account of what's in your right now, I think we would all find that, man, our life is really, really good. Let's say it this way, number five. We grumble when we judge the future by the present. So we get, the psychological word for this is despair. Despair is the thought that tomorrow is simply a repeat of yesterday. But resurrection blows that up. Resurrection says, and this is the resurrection season. Resurrection says, no. New creation can burst forth right in the middle of this one. Tomorrow is not simply a repeat of yesterday. There is a surprise. There is a hope. This is resurrection. Because when we think tomorrow is a simply repeat of yesterday, we lose sight of the whole story and lose our vision for the future. We lose sight of the story and lose our energy and passion. We get into despair. We grumble when we think. The psychological word for it would be freeze the present. And it's just in us to freeze the present. It's in us when we're going through something to think this will never end. Heck, even if we get a bad enough cold, 3 days into it, we're like, I'll never breathe again, right? This will never change, right? Or when your heart gets broken. You know, everybody remember your first breakup, right? And of course you do. So you remember, you know, you fall in love, you're like 14, and so when the wind blows, everything feels like love, right? And I remember the first girl that broke up with me, and of course it was mutual, right? And I was all upset, you know. And I'm in the car and I'm all upset and I'm crying. Dad's like, "What's the matter with you?" You know, and I'm like, "Oh man, Dad, I love her," you know, and da 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 da. And of course, that adolescent, everything's a disaster, right? And my dad, with all the compassion in the world, he was like, "Are you crying over a girl?" And I said, "Yes." He handed me a potted plant, and he's like, "Well, if you're gonna cry over a girl, at least cry into the plant so the tears will do something." Yeah. He's such a man of compassion. But when we freeze the present, it leads us to despair, and we will grumble. We'll grumble. No, let's say it this way. Number six, we grumble when we forget life is a marathon and not a sprint. This is an insight I got from the great Richard Rohr, the great Franciscan monk who I think has a PhD in saying profound things. We tend to overestimate what we can do in a year, but underestimate what we can do in 10 years. That maturity is understanding that it will not always feel new. That maturity is that. See, we grumble when we lose that new feeling. We grumble when we realize that life, when we forget that life is a marathon and never, ever a sprint. Because in a marathon, there are times you want to quit. But when you push through, you get to the finish line. So how can we summarize today? If you're the type that sort of listens to the first 3 minutes and then the last 3 minutes, right? And you can come back now. right? Here's the next slide. How can we summarize today? Don't grumble. Do all things. How much clearer can he be? Do all things without grumbling or complaining, that you may be holy and blameless. What an incredible theological connection that I'll let you wrestle with. Don't grumble, but rather shine like stars. See, great sermons are not meant to be agreed with or disagreed with. Great sermons are meant to be wrestled with. And to wrestle requires questions. So let's ask a few questions that I hope we can wrestle with. One, what does this mean for our everyday life? Seriously, be brave enough to ask the question. In the last 7 days, how have I done not grumbling or disputing? How have I done? And please resist the urge to think, boy, I wish such and so was here to hear this. Just for a second. There's a woman at the back pointing at her husband. It's like that scene from Dumb and Dumber. Who hit me with the salt shaker? Is shining as simple as not grumbling? Paul is making what it means to be a light in your city as simple as being known as a group of people who aren't grumblers. Is shining as simple as keep going in the middle of obstacles? Is shining as simple as knowing deep down that we have enough right now? Maybe we need to be brave enough to ask this question. Where do we need to repent from grumbling? What in the last 7 days, 30 days, I'll be vulnerable. Yesterday, I grumbled about the roads here. I do find it stressful to drive in Melbourne because there are times you have to turn down railroad tracks. Have you not noticed this? It's a very freaky feeling. And then sometimes, there's a lot of people that live here, and it's a four-lane road that actually only functions as a two-lane road because they let people park on the road. Shine like stars. And I actually had to stop myself. I was like, no, I'm in Melbourne in a motor car on a paved road going to a store that prepackages food for me. I'm not going to complain about the parking. Come on, come on, come on. But where do we need to repent from not shining as stars? I'm sure someone who was born in Sudan, if they heard me complaining about the roads in Melbourne, they'd be like, what are you talking about, right? What do you need to remember? Where's your whole, have you lost sight of the bigger story? Which leads me to this. Paul wrote this on, I don't know, papyrus or something, and had to hand it to a mail carrier and hope he didn't get eaten by a mountain lion to get it to one group of people. I started thinking, I wonder if Paul would have had the internet and was able to email this and attach something to go, here's an illustration of what I'm talking about. Somebody sent me this video that I think illustrates what it means to shine like stars as good as anything I've ever seen. This is probably a 2 or 3 year old person, little girl. She has leukemia. She's in the hospital. She's got tubes in her nose. Obviously going through a lot of horrendous stuff. And I think if Paul could say, here's what I mean by shining like stars, he would have attached this video. Let me show it to you.
Let me hear it. Let me hear it.
Really awesome.
What was it you were going to grumble about? I bless you, my brothers and sisters, to not just be people on your way to heaven when you die, but be people who bring heaven to every place you see hell here by being a light to your world. How do you do that? Don't grumble. Shine like stars.